Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And I know I say that every week, but the fact of the matter is, it is getting better and better and newer all the time. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now Boston, Massachusetts. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's our guarantee to you. Also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's very inventory-starved kind of marketplace we're in for existing housing, you'll want to make sure that you compete with the very best offers when you're in a competitive situation. And the best way to do that is either with cash, which not that many people have when you're looking at the average sale price in Western New York, but with a pre-purchase commitment, you have the equivalent of cash. And so when your agent presents that offer, you're in a very strong position. So call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 for personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. And check out that low rate guarantee. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. All you have to do is dial 716-631-4800. That's the local number. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that particular property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. So when you drive by and you see a sign with 14 phone numbers and pictures and arrows and everything else on it, ignore it. Just dial 631-4800. Just get the number of the house, and the system will take care of the rest. We have a very active real estate market, as I indicated earlier. In spite of the fact that we have a smaller inventory, sales are actually slightly ahead of last year. So you want to make sure that you are competitive, and you want to make sure that you also are equipped to buy a home. And if you're considering selling a property, now is the time. I don't think I've seen any time in my experience in real estate where a seller has a better opportunity to do well financially on their house, better perhaps financially than they ever could, than right this very minute. So contact us today, 633-9400. Remember, if you have a home to sell, only Hunt Real Estate ERA professionals can look in the eye and tell you this, that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan. It's available only through Hunt Real Estate ERA agents. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. And we had a nice celebration of 50 years for the Buffalo Sabres the other night. It's good to have Mr. Golisano back in town, Larry Quinn, and some of our great players from the past. And it was great that we won that game that night. Anyway, we are live here at WBEN 930 AM. And if you'd like to participate in today's show, you can call us here in the studio with 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, star 930 for mobile. Those are all free calls. And if you want to text us, you can reach us at 30930 by text. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is an old friend and somebody who's a good friend to our community, Paul Simonelli. Mr. Simonelli is the president and CEO of Simonelli Real Estate. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Peter.
Good to have you back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
So what I want you to do first, Paul, is kind of walk us through a little bit about how you got where you are and your family history in the real estate business. I think it's important for our listeners to know. I know they probably noticed that you're one of the most powerful people in Buffalo now. You're above me on the list, and I'm trying to figure out what the difference is, but congratulations.
Well, anyway. Thanks, Peter. That list, everyone bounces around from year to year on their rankings, but I started with my dad in the mid-80s. When we were back then, it was called Simonelli Development Company. When we were building a lot in the suburbs at the time, because the city was going through some challenges, so we were building flex and office buildings and in some business parks out in primarily Amherst and then around the airport area and whatever. And Worked together with my dad for a number of years and kind of grew the business. And he's always been a great partner. He was really the entrepreneurial driver behind the company. He used to be the guy doing all the deals, and I was helping build the company because he always said to me, I had a company before, the construction company, of which my brother took over, in, I think, late 80s, early 90s. And then he said, I don't want to build another company, so I'll just go out and do deals, and you do the build the company. I said, okay. So we did. I thought worked together as a good team. We built, I think, a pretty really good organization. We're fortunate to have some really good people there. A lot of them are still with us today. And then we diversified. I wanted to go into, we diversified into Florida in the late 90s. We were there in the early 80s, kind of did some things. Were successful in some deals, and then the market tanked down there, got out, and then got back in the late 90s. Since then, we've grown a pretty robust operation down there. We have almost 8.5 million feet that we service in terms of through our real estate office or headquarters in Tampa. We're actually in Fort Lauderdale. We actually opened an office in Tallahassee before because we had a big assignment there. We're in Orlando and St. Petersburg area. And then we just like you, we actually started to get involved in the Boston market because we see Boston as a pretty strong economy. It's pretty diverse. It's got good demographics. There's a lot of pluses around the greater Boston area. And we have a, I have a friend of mine who's we're partnering with up there who's actually working with us for in. Looking at investment opportunities there. We continue to grow our operating and management platform. We just actually went into Eastern. We're in, obviously, Pennsylvania, upstate New York. And we're, I believe, in West Virginia and Eastern Ohio. And these are all geographic expansions based on the clients that we get. And another thing, just you're, I think, what, fourth generation?
I'm third.
Charlie's fourth. Mm-hmm. And my son's third. He just came back from New York after a successful, 15-year career. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think the statistics, you guys are really going against the curve because I think 10% of the companies make it to third generation. I'm sure the number drops off significantly to fourth.
It's less than 10. It's actually closer to 2.
Two for fourth generation?
For third.
Oh, is it third?
It drops off
like
a stone. Oh,
is there what it is? Okay, yes. Then maybe it's from... So what is fourth then?
Fourth is minuscule.
That's hard. A lot of heat on Charlie, you know.
Lots of heat on Charlie and his siblings and everybody else associated. But, you know, it's what you're citing here is hopefully what... If a business wants to stay private,
right,
and it wants to stay viable... you have to have the generational transfer, and it's nice to see what happened with your father and you and your brother, and now with your son. I think it's great.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I remember working with your dad. I mean, one of the first things I did when I started in mid '80s is I had breakfast with your dad at the Pancake House, I'll never forget this in Williamsville, and I looked at your dad and I said, Stuart, what do we need to do to be more competitive? And he gave me some insight that I'll never forget. We didn't really have we were a new company, so we didn't really have a good leasing process. And he said, he was very candid. He said, you're not easy to do business with, your company. And he told me why. And so I came back and I told my dad, I said, we got to retool this place because, somebody like your father, who was an icon in the business and it is on the commercial side, because that's what I known him from, said to me, if you got to do this, this, and this. And I told my dad, I said, well, if Stuart Hunt says that, we got to do it because if we don't, we're not going to be competitive. And I'll never forget that. And he was a real gentleman, and I learned a lot from him. And then I sat on the board with them down at Buffalo Place for a number of years. So I've been at it for over 30 years. I've always been committed to Western New York. Our family has. I think there's a lot of good things going on in our community now. My only concern is I think people don't understand what it took to get to this point. And I always say, even in our company and the community, let's not spike the football because we got a long, long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
We're still playing from behind.
You're exactly right. As long as we're telling stories for a second, I remember your your dad was one of the first of that generation when I started in business to reach out to me, and it was kind of by accident. We were playing golf, and he gave me the little bit of the history of your company, which goes back farther than what you were saying. And your father's telling me how he started business pouring driveways and doing concrete work, and out of that developed what you've built today, which is really remarkable. But your father was a most interesting guy. First of all, he knew construction like I've never seen in my life. I remember going through his house on his invitation,
right.
And looking at the way the doors in that house were built and how the finish on those doors, and I'll never forget that as long as I live. And he went into long detail about how they were done, and it was a great experience. Your father was a very fine man. But anyway, back to the to present. I think this is really what it's nice to tell stories. But let's talk about where we are today. And you brought up an interesting issue, whether you identified it as such, and that is the issue of our momentum in this community, which is something that I think concerns both you and me and everybody. And I've been asking all my guests that have the degree of influence that you exhibit in our community, what it is about our community that we need to, highlight to make sure that our momentum continues. What needs to happen here? We were talking before the show, but just touch on a few things that you think need to happen for us to continue the momentum that so many of us feel.
Well, first, I think one of the things that used to bother me about this community is we did a great job of promoting our weaknesses. Everyone would always talk about what Buffalo doesn't have or some of the things that challenges that we have. And it used to really bother me because I said no one promoted our weaknesses better than our own community. I said if you were a company, what you really do is you go out there and you promote your strengths. You don't promote your weaknesses. You try and focus on your strengths and deal with your weaknesses, but you don't promote that. And we did that too much as a community. And I think that's changed a lot. That's one of the things I've changed. It's almost like the karma was flipped a few years ago from why Buffalo to why not Buffalo for a lot of good things. And what I see going on is there's a number of good things happening. The city's really changed a lot. It started under Tony Masiello's administration, and then Byron Brown picked it up about how we made the city more livable, and and that drove investment. There's been a lot of residential development on the rental side, a lot of apartments being developed. A lot of it driven by some of the, rehabbing and renovating a lot of the older buildings through the historic tax credit program, which is a good thing. And also downtown continues to become more of a 24/7 downtown. People are living there. You just saw a report in the Buffalo News last week about how many apartments have been developed. I think that it's been done that's the good news. The one of the things I think needs to be done more is it's been a little scattershot though. It hasn't been as done in a way that other communities done in more creating more neighborhoods within like the downtown. I'd like to see that being done because that's been done in other communities. I always talk about cities like Cleveland and Pittsburgh and Milwaukee, which are comparable cities to us, Midwest cities, and how they've been able to cluster their developments, create critical mass downtown, create neighborhoods. It's almost like a Larkinville on steroids. If you look at Larkinville as an example, Larkinville is a really great development. The Zemskys have done a great job. They really it's not just a bunch of buildings. They really energized a neighborhood, but it's not connected to downtown. You mm-hmm. go through almost like this. You drive down Seneca, you got downtown, and then you drive for a mile or two. You can't walk to it from downtown. So it's almost like a mini suburb or a submarket that's not directly connected to downtown. You have the same thing on Ohio Street. You got some development going on there, but the buildings are not clustered. So it's not tied into the canal side where it's all one long one neighborhood that basically has critical mass and more of a pedestrian type environment. I still think for a city our size, you have to drive around too much to appreciate what's going on, as opposed to having, you know, being able to walk to more places.
Which is why parking is such an important thing in our city. People, like you say, they feel they have to be able to get in their car and get someplace and park right next to the door so they don't have to walk anywhere. And this is, I mean, you can go to cities all across the upper part of the country and there are walkable communities. And if you look at the value of real estate, and I'm sure you've looked at this residentially, the greatest value is in walkable communities.
Right. That's true. And, you know, it's funny. Some people say, oh, they blame it on the weather. You know, and I say, well, I don't know. There's a lot of great walkable cities in Canada. Mm-hmm. And there's no such thing as, they call it, there's no such thing as bad weather. They say it's not bad weather, it's bad clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when you, and then some cities you're forced, I mean, we have one gentleman works for us who came back from Boston, and he's talked about when he lived in downtown Boston in or around the Back Bay area, he had to walk to work every day. No matter what the weather was like, he had a 20-minute walk. It was too expensive to own a car, and you just walked. And if you look at a city like Boston that's very vibrant, very walkable, it enhances the value of the real estate. It creates more of a critical mass. It creates more neighborhoods. And we have to really, for a city our size, we really depend on a car way too much.
You know, if you use the Larkinville example that you described earlier, and we've talked about that often on the show, Howard's been on the show several times, and the idea was really to create another village effectively in downtown. And I think the hope, everyone's hope, was that gap, that 1 mile gap, which is all it is from the Central Business District to Larkinville, would gradually fill. And there's a little bit of that, but not that much. There's still, in my mind, a vast underdevelopment along the way. My theory on that, Paul, and I'd like your reaction to it, and the county executive here on the show has alluded to it slightly differently, but that all that would happen if we had population growth, all that infill will happen, that what we do so much of, and my father used to tell me about this, and I'm sure your father felt this too, is that we move people from one place to another, but we don't have a lot of net gain, particularly when it comes to businesses and offices. Because let's say when you were building all the stuff in the suburbs, those people had to come from someplace for the most part. There weren't a lot of brand new businesses coming to town. So where did they come from? To a large extent, they evacuated downtown and came out to the suburbs because of the things you just mentioned. It was easy to park. You create a campus-like environment. It's comfortable, friendly, nice, close to shopping, blah, 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 close to their homes too, which is the other thing. So what do you think about the future of our community from a standpoint of population growth? How do we attract people here, keep them here, so that areas like that 1 mile stretch between downtown and Larkinville fill in, like we become less dependent upon cars because people live closer together because there's more of us?
Well, first of all, if you look at what other cities have done, and if you look at right next to downtown in Cleveland, there's an area called the Warehouse District. And there was a cluster of buildings that they developed into some residential. And then what you have is because they have a critical mass of buildings, they could support retail on the first floor, or the ground floor, I should say, at the street level. I put another example is the Third Ward, historic Third Ward in Milwaukee, which is, I say, it's like Larkinville on steroids. It's a very vibrant neighborhood. So the point is they have similar demographics than we do. I think because if you're a little more demographically challenged, you have to focus your developments together and cluster them so you can leverage off of that, as opposed to just having them spread all over the place, which I think Buffalo's you've seen in the last 15 years there's a lot of that going on. A perfect example is Rockland Termini's doing some really good stuff on Chandler Street, but to get to Chandler Street, you got to drive. Mm-hmm. And it'd be nice if you can take Chandler Street and fill it in and move Chandler Street downtown to near Ohio Street and whatever, to start clustering all these together. And I think, you know, on the population growth side, I think that we have to continue to attract young people back. One son just moved back from New York. My other son's moving back in the middle of summer. And you got to create more of an opportunity for these people to have careers. We already have the quality of life portion of it taken care of. I mean, my two sons are moving back because of the quality of life that Buffalo has to offer in terms of a sense of community. It is pretty user-friendly as a mid-sized city. I always said that Buffalo's, you know, got some, you know, really great amenities for a mid-sized city. We have professional sports. We have great, you know, in terms of culture here and the history of that, great architecture. We're in a really good place geographically between Niagara Falls, Toronto, and New York. So we have a lot of strengths we got to leverage off of. I think what we have to continue to do is grow our ecosystem in terms of growing companies here organically, create an environment that young people can come here and make a difference and start a business and have the support around it to be able to grow it. Whether it's doing business, it's not just doing business here in Western New York. Their business might be international. I mean, that's the way, you know, business could be done nowadays because of technology. But I do think that they need mentorship, they need help, they need resources for them to be able to grow their business, whether it's servicing Western New York as a market or servicing the world as a market. I think that's one of the things we do. We have had some really good examples of that through the 43 North program, but that's always that's a start. What we have to do is build on our successes and continue to do that. I think sometimes here we look and say, oh, that's good. Now let's go to the next thing. No, you really can't do. You got to make sure that you focus. When you have limited resources, like you said, Peter, we have, whether it's financially, demographically, you gotta be focused with it. It can't be scattershot. You can't be spread too thin that you're supporting too many initiatives that everything gets diluted. I think sometimes we have a tendency to do that. I think we need to be more focused on how we spend our money, whether it's through the public sector, the private sector, whatever, and just fund up certain areas of the community and certain strategic initiatives and then let everything else fall in underneath that.
You compare us to a couple other states, and I want you to come back to that after the break. We do have to go to break. We'll be right back with more from our house tiers after these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. Mortgage rates have recently dropped, and now is an ideal time to purchase a home and lock in a low rate. If you're already a homeowner, let's discuss your current mortgage. There may never be a better time to reduce your rate or access the equity in your home by refinancing with Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for a free, no obligation consultation.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate, and through our links to Phoenix, Arizona, and also Boston, Massachusetts. And you also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our exclusive program that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, effectively allowing you to buy the before but live the after, knowing exactly what you're going to be in for, call 633-3700 and ask for details. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan, special little gift from us to you, only at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700. And by the way, if you've been to another lender and you think you've got a great deal, even if it's a rocket mortgage or whatever they call themselves, you want to talk to the people at Hunt Mortgage anyway, because we have a program called Second Look. And what that allows you to do is to make sure that you're getting the best deal possible. You have to keep in mind, if you see an advertisement on television for just about anything, you know the cost of that product or service is going to be built into whatever it is, the price you're going to pay. It's true of a mortgage, too. You don't see us on television, you hear us here on the radio, and what we want to do is deliver you the lowest cost mortgage, the lowest rate and closing costs possible in the marketplace. So before you do anything, have us take a second look. And by the way, if we can't beat it, we'll give you a gift certificate for $100. So that's an opportunity that you can't avoid, hopefully, benefiting from. So call us today, 633-3700. And if you just have a general inquiry about real estate, call our Hunt Customer Service Center, the only one that's kind in North America, 633-9400. Ask one of our customer service reps to either solve your problem there on the phone or direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA professional. Stop into one of our many open houses this week and ask if that can work for you. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me is Paul Simonelli. Mr. Simonelli is the president and CEO of Simonelli Real Estate, and we've been talking specifically about Mr. Simonelli's company, and then we kind of diverged into our community and what's happening here and how we maintain our momentum in this community. And before we leave that topic, Paul, I'd like you to, you mentioned a couple other states, Wisconsin, Ohio, Florida, Massachusetts. There's things happening there, and we think we're got a pretty good place here in Buffalo and that we're at a pretty good place, but those places had a head start on us, number one, because they seem to get off to a start or never lose their momentum, in the case, for example, of Boston. So how do we, not just as Western New York, but the whole state, how do we put ourselves in a position where we can effectively compete?
It's a tough question, because I think, I've said, if you just look at the numbers, Peter, and I'm giving you approximates, the population of Florida just passed New York State, last year?
Mm-hmm.
Their state budget's, I think, somewhere in the mid-$90 billion range. Our state budget's $178 billion. So if you just do the simple math, their population's bigger, their state budget's almost half ours. And I don't care who's governor, you're not going to be able to. There's so much legacy cost built mm-hmm. baked into that 178.
Right.
And then I think if you throw in the city of New York, I think they're another $80 billion. In fact, the city of New York's budget is almost the size of the state of Florida. So mm-hmm. it's almost like a quarter of a trillion dollars of state budget, or should say government budget.
That doesn't even count the local government.
Right, right. That's just too – right. And I think a lot of that is such legacy costs that it's going to be hard to change. I think, in my opinion, the easier way to change what's going on in New York State is in the regulatory side. I still think there's a lot of regulations in the state that make it much more difficult to do business. I call them hidden taxes. And I've said this to politicians before. We can model taxes, and you know this, Peter, because you and I have talked about it for a number of years. You know what taxes cost in the real estate business.
Mm-hmm.
But what you don't know is how long in time is money, is how long it's going to take your project to get approved, how long, and if your project's delayed. Those are hidden taxes. Those drive your costs up, and sometimes they're hard to put into the economics of the deal, because it's gray. It's not black and white. Taxes are pretty much black and white in the real estate business. So that makes it more difficult. And there's other states that in Florida, it's more county government. It's regional. You do pay impact fees is one of the ways they keep their taxes lower. There are project costs, but you pay them. You're done. You're off and running. It's a little more of a streamlined process to get a shovel in the ground.
A little more.
Yeah, in Florida than it is in New York State. So it makes it that much more challenging here to do business.
Well, before you elaborate on that, we have a caller on the line. This is Gary from Boston. Gary, how can we help you?
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I think Buffalo's lacking in the transportation department. I think we should have looping runs, going to all the Larkinville, the downtown, perhaps from Canisius College down Jefferson, the downtown. Even if we have to offer a private company to do some of the runs, but it should be more of a non-profit situation where we just try to collect the fares to get up the cost.
How much do you know about the NFTA, Paul? I know they run those distances.
Yeah, they do. I've talked to the NFTA about some of this stuff. I think this caller, though, is on to something, because I do think one of the ways that we have to make this city even more livable is we have to invest more in public transportation. There's a mm-hmm. lot of millennials who move back here to say, I didn't want to own a car. You're mm-hmm. forcing me to own a car, which is one of the reasons why unfortunately, rents are kept in a lower, that are lower here in the cities, because people do have to own cars. And I do think we need to have a more robust public transportation. I think this gentleman is correct that you do. I don't know if he's from Boston, New York, or Boston, Massachusetts. But we do need to invest in that. And I've talked to the NFTA, and I do think that it's something that we have to rally behind. You know, it reminds me, and when I was talking to, actually, I had this conversation with Kim Mankel, I said, you know, Kim,
the head of the NFTA.
Yeah, the head of the NFTA. And I said, when this community focuses in on something, Peter, you remember back in the 90s when we had probably the worst airport in the country and the highest airfares. And this community rallied behind, and there were people that were good old Louis Call and people at the NFTA at the time. He was chairman of the board of the NFTA, Bob Wilmers and other people. We invested in a new airport. We brought JetBlue here. And I told this to Kim. We have gone from probably, I call it worst to first. Mm-hmm. Now you look at our airport, it's number one airport.
Mid-sized
city in the country. Yep. I said, so there's a classic example of the community saying, we got to fix this. Mm-hmm. We'll never be able to compete as a region with these high airfares and this bad airport as a gateway. So I do think I'm not saying we're the worst for public transportation, but we really have to up our game there. I think we have to focus our resources on that. And I think it'll go a long way to connecting these neighborhoods and driving values up, because if people have more money to spend on rent and real estate, and they don't have to spend it on cars.
Well, you know, you make a good point that because people are effectively, in many cases, without a choice whether or not they own a car,
right,
it effectively raises the cost, the other costs that all contribute or part of the affordability. And if you are spending more money in one area, that's less that you have to spend in another, which will artificially keep rents down.
Right, exactly.
And the same thing for office space, for that matter.
Yeah, there's an interesting, some of the metrics you look at, like rental income as a percentage of overall gross income. And, you know, it's really low in Buffalo. I mean, and I know it gets up as high in like San Francisco and New York, is almost like the average person on the rental side, I think, spend something like in the mid-50s% of their income on housing, which is in a lot of cases rental housing. In New York, you know, people say, oh my God, it's so expensive. I say, yeah, it is, but remember this, you don't have to own a car. Mm-hmm. And if the average price of cost of owning a car costs you, I don't even know, $500-$700 a month, do that math.
Probably more.
Yeah, and that's just the ownership. That doesn't include parking,
insurance,
gas, whatever. So you add that all in, it could be $1,000 a month.
Right. And that's got to come out of someplace.
Exactly.
So anyway, so we've got built-in costs here that are perhaps hidden somewhat that keep rents down. We've got taxation, which you mentioned earlier, that also has to affect affordability in one way, shape, or form, whether the landlord's paying it or the tenant or the owner's paying it through a condominium, for example. But one thing we were talking about earlier before the show was the fact that there's a growing pool of rental housing in downtown, but not enough ownership opportunities through condominiums, for example. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, I think it doesn't surprise me that we're in that situation, because people will take a risk on a neighborhood or a project through rent, because it's, you know, you basically sign a 1-year lease. You're not signing up with Hunt and getting a mortgage from Hunt Real Estate to buy a condominium. So I think it's really nice that we pioneered the residential market downtown with rental. I think we're getting to a point where there's a critical mass of rental downtown, where it kind of proves out that living downtown could be nice. Mm-hmm. We're actually doing a project in 201 Ellicott that is affordable housing project that is going to bring a market downtown, because that's one thing that people talk about is an amenity that's needed. I think one of the challenges you have is the cost of construction in Western New York is not cheap. And one of the things that we've had and that you've looked at is we have to get this community's income growth broad-based higher. We're, I think, 40% of the national average in the last how many years. That's not going to be able it makes it more difficult to sell new condominiums in downtown Buffalo. Now, you got nice initiatives like what M&T Bank's doing, by bringing their tech hub and bringing hopefully 1,500 jobs downtown, high-paying jobs. So, you know, that's a start.
I want to come back to that because I think this is a kind of a critical issue for our community going forward in terms of housing. There's a shortage of inventory, yet at the same time there's seemingly brand new product that's not there as well.
Right.
And we'll be right back with more from our Austeers after these important messages.
Hi, this is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. Mortgage rates have recently dropped, and now is an ideal time to purchase a home and lock in a low rate. If you're already a homeowner, let's discuss your current mortgage. There may never be a better time to reduce your rate or access the equity in your home by refinancing with Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 for a free, no obligation consultation.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the low-rate guarantee, low-rate and closing cost guarantee, as well as the pre-purchase commitment. Call today, 633-3700. We have a very special show for you today in our last segment here with Paul Simonelli, the president and CEO of Simonelli Real Estate. We've had kind of a wide-ranging discussion here about everything Western New York in terms of the momentum and what's possible and not possible here and why we may have kind of a glass ceiling on some of our revenue opportunities for landlords and developers, largely because of other costs that mix in with the whole matter such that affordability is affected and there has to be a give someplace. And unfortunately, sometimes it's on the price of the unit, for example, for a condominium, and other times it's in the form of rent. But before we get to come back to that, Paul, we have a caller online. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter.
Hey, John.
Paul, state legislature, you were talking about mandates and how they negatively affect economic vitality. One of the latest bills that were passed by the legislature had to do with tenant rights. And part of that legislation has, I think, a provision in it. If a municipality has a vacancy rate of 5% or less, rent control can be imposed. Do you see that as being a real negative?
I definitely do. I talked to some of our state politicians especially in the Senate, and said that we definitely do not need rent control in anything north of Westchester County in this state. I mean, if you really want to kill development, you know, even have just start talking about rent control. I don't understand. I mean, why don't you look at the metrics of forget about supply demand dynamics. Why don't you look at the metrics of percentage of income relative to, like I said earlier, of what they're spending on housing, you know, you can use it as there's formulas out there, average median income, whatever. And if you look at that and compare that to what people are spending on average, you'll see that upstate New York is I think still priced too cheap. I mean, there's markets outside of upstate New York and other markets that get, you know, we always, I use the dollar per square foot per month, that our market maybe is on the high end is $1.65, $1.70 a month. There's a lot of other markets in outside of Western New York, mid-sized cities outside of upstate New York, similar demographics that are priced at $225 to $250 a month. And like I said, the construction costs in Western New York are pretty expensive and on par with some of those other cities, and they're getting 225 and 230, 240, you know, that much.
What's the difference then? How do you rationalize that?
Well, first of all, some of it's income growth. I mean, I was mentioning the other day, Peter, if you look at the average median income of the city of Pittsburgh, it's one-third higher than Buffalo's. They have similar demographics. Their population, believe it or not, in the city of Pittsburgh did not grow over the last 10 years. But one of the things they've been able to do is grow their average median income. So they have more pricing power. They've done a really good job of retooling their economy. They did it in a very focused way. I've said this to people the other day. I said, if you really look at the future of autonomous vehicles and what's going on there, I said, it's being developed in, not in Silicon Valley, not in Boston. It's developed 200 miles south of us between Carnegie Mellon, Google, and right in the city of Pittsburgh. And they made a, that's one of the things they focused on, is that, you know, a knowledge-based industry that they focus their resources on, and it's had a huge spillover effect to the whole community. And they're also really, really big in healthcare with UPMC and the things they've been able to do there. So they really have really, really retooled their economy. I think that there's a city that we can look at to say, what did they do different? And you know, they had the same challenges we did, but they've been able to rally their community. They had a lot of good funding. There's some deep-pocketed foundations down there that have supported these initiatives. So it's really been a really collaborative effort to focus on some really couple of key areas and strengths within their own community to leverage that up to have broad-based income growth. So, I mean, Pittsburgh is an example of that.
One of the things that they can claim, is the presence of more Fortune 500 companies, obviously. And they've got many more members of the Forbes 400 than we do.
Right.
So, and that relates to the foundations that you're talking about that finance a lot of the public entities, the public functions, the philanthropic functions in that city that, you know, we just don't have anything. We have something comparable, but it's not to that extent.
Yeah, and they've had a legacy of that. Some of those foundations were some old family money like Mellons and, you know, and Stewart's and people like that that, you know, and so that's, there's a long history.
Hines, there's a few names like that are
exactly.
Pretty powerful. Before we go to the next topic, which I want to close with, which is the current developments you're working on, I'd like to take this call from Millie in Amherst. Millie, how can we help you?
Yes, I was wondering your feelings, both of you, on the convention center in Buffalo, whether this is it's a great deal of money, whether we would be able to support it, whether there is a need for this in terms of convention cities. Just how do you feel about this new development with Mr. Poling Cars and his feelings that this is a way that Buffalo should go?
Very interesting question. I know you have feelings about this, Paul. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, if we're going to be in that business, and I'm not smart enough to figure out if we should or not, I'll just say a couple things. If we're going to be in that business, we should really play to win. I mean, we have to up our budget for Visit Buffalo Niagara. We can't be on par with Grand Rapids. And I've said this before, you can't even begin to look at a new convention center unless you're going to fund up the program to support it and go out and market it. That's number one. Number two, I looked at the study. One of the things I thought that was lacking, again, this is just me, my opinion, is there's no hotel room, a hotel, convention center hotel directly attached to it, which I think in a northern climate like Buffalo has, obviously, that I think that's missing in it. Over $400 million is a lot of money. I don't know if it's worth it, what the ROI, return on investment, or something like that, because I know right behind that there's going to be an ask for either a refurbished or a new stadium. So we could be talking upwards of a $1 billion ask somewhere, someone, whether it's Albany or whoever, to fund those two, community assets.
Not to mention ongoing costs.
Well, exactly. So if we are going to do it, we got to do it right. It's a big investment. You can't just look at, say, and think, because we have a tendency in this community to look at the shiny new toy or what's the latest and greatest that's going to save us. And you got to look at it and say, it's the ongoing cost of saying, if we invest over $400 million in a new convention center, are we going to back it up with a budget to market and promote it that is competitive with our peer cities? Or are we just going to have a do the field of dreams, build it and hope they will come?
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting point. And we've had Patrick Kaler from the Visitors and Convention Bureau. We've had the county executive, the mayor, all on. And we've talked about this. And we know that we're underfunded in that department. But there's this logjam. There doesn't seem to be an outlet. There doesn't seem to be a communication going on that's going to change that, unfortunately.
Well, you know, one of the things I think that it's been what I've seen a number of studies is tourism is a profit center for communities. So I don't know why we don't invest more in it. And I think that Buffalo, you know, it's interesting about Buffalo. We have really good, we're a very user-friendly city from the outside, from people who come here. Right. We're friendly. We got great restaurant scenes. We get great assets. We got, you know, the culturals and whatever, especially for a city our size. We're very fortunate. We have Niagara Falls. We also have the opportunity to, you know, I mean, we're really almost less than 2 hours up the road from one of the wealthiest cities in North America that's growing at a pace of over 100 to 150,000 people a year in their metropolitan area, and that's Toronto. Mm-hmm. So if we can pull people up, I mean, how many times we heard this, Peter, that people in the 50s used to come from Toronto to visit Buffalo.
That's right.
And if mm-hmm. we can somewhat capture that again, or at least a portion of that, I think we can go a long way, and it's only 2 hours away.
My family came from Toronto.
Okay.
To come to Buffalo because this was the big city at that, you know, years and years and years ago. Before we close the show, I'd like you to talk about a couple of your current projects, Paul, because I think that's important our listeners know that we're not here just to look at the community as a whole, but we're actually doing something here. So talk about what you're going on right now.
Yeah, I'll talk about a couple of them. I call it bookending the market. We have a project on the waterfront in Erie Basin Marina in the waterfront village called the West End, and it's 20 luxury townhouses that we are very excited about. We think it's one of the things that we really like about the fact that it's the last parcel of any significance to be developed there. So that's really one of the things that really drove us, you know, our level of interest to the project, and we were fortunate to be selected by the city as the developer. And we're very bullish on that. There hasn't been any real new product in that market segment built there in years. So we think that there's a great opportunity there. And one of the other things I talk about with people is, you know, and thank God for the Wilson Foundation, because they're investing, I don't know, $50, $60 million right next door in LaSalle Park. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's going to be a great amenity for that whole area. It's really going to help continue to revitalize that whole area. And our project is really more of it's an infill project. So, it like I said, it develops the last parcel there available. We've seen some good interest in it, and we think the timing of that project couldn't be better. So we're very bullish on that. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we're developing a 201 apartment unit project at 201 Ellicott in the city that was another infill project that took a surface parking lot off the market. And we're also developing that with Bray Miller Market. We think that this is going to be a great project. It's going to kind of be a first-class affordable housing project that we think is needed in downtown Buffalo. It serves a part of the market that we feel is underserved for downtown. It's, you know, for lack of a better term, it's kind of like workforce housing. It's priced obviously right below the luxury apartment market. And, you know, we have 201 units. It's starting to create more of a neighborhood around that whole area that I know that was near and dear to the mayor and to the city about doing more infill and creating more critical mass. So we're really bullish about that, and we're very excited about that.
We've only got about a minute left. Paul, if our listeners wanted to learn more about Simonelli Real Estate and your projects, what would they do?
Well, we typically we have our website that we keep pretty current.
But for example, if they want to learn more about the West End.
Well, they can search on for the website for the West End, mm-hmm. and also for 201 Ellicott or any of our other apartment projects that we have within the city, whether it's the Bethune Lofts, Sinclair, or Mentholatum. Those are all great projects that we've done that are adaptive reuse and are pretty bullish about those.
Paul Simonelli, President and CEO of Simonelli Real Estate, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank all our listeners for being with us. We'll be back on next week at the same time. I'm sorry I didn't get to a couple callers. We had one comment on our text feed about the fact that not enough people are riding the buses, and we could comment on that all day. But the fact of life is we are here to support the momentum in our community, and Paul Simonelli is one of the great advocates of that. We'll be back on next week at the same time. Remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is hunt country.